financial independence, country shopping, van nomadism, security culture, ethical enclaves, crypto anarchy, legal interstices, survivalism. Join your hosts, Shane and Kyle, as they explore this freedom strategy known as Vaunting. You're listening to the Vaunting Podcast.
And welcome to the Vaunting Podcast, the podcast making you invulnerable to coercion. I'm Shane and...
I'm Kyle.
Take it away, my good sir.
Since governments are the primary coercers upon individuals, the Vaunting Podcast is covered by a BIPCOD no government license. Reuse and modification is permitted to anyone, except for governments and the agents thereof. You can learn more at BIPCOT.org.
All right, so, you know, it's good to be back with you, Kyle. How's it going? What's new?
I would just say I'm kind of enjoying my involuntary vacation from the one job, really, but and otherwise not really going doing too much with the other one, so really just kind of enjoying, I guess you could say, the weekends I missed, you know, working 7 days a week and all that, you know, 70-hour weeks sometimes and so forth. But yeah, otherwise, I'm just catching up on sleep and then, of course, getting back to writing and so forth, especially for season two material.
Right, right. Yeah, you need to get that Ethical Enclaves article done, man. You know, the readers are waiting.
Yeah, well, again, good quality work takes time. But yeah, now that I'm not dealing as much with those within the Servile Society, it looks like I can pretty much get back to something I actually care about rather than pleasing the boss so I don't get axed.
No, I'm just giving you a hard time. I'm just giving you a hard time. But very good. Very good. You know, looking forward to, you know, those articles obviously make it easier to prep for the podcast. And, you know, I do think, you know, that some people do better with, you know, written material. So I like to provide them, you know, all of the options. Right.
Amen to that. Serve all sorts of market demand because people just learn in, you know, differently in different ways.
And that's why government schools are bad. One of the reasons. There's no one size fits all to, you know, education. So
right.
So all right, very good. So I mean, you know, I'll just go ahead and mention this. You know, things are pretty great over here. You know, the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest is just under 3 days away. You know, at the time of this recording, I'll be leaving on. You know, it's currently Monday, June 19th, and I'll be heading out Wednesday evening with my companions to head north. And I guess the other thing is I got my brother started in cryptocurrency speculation. It was kind of funny, Kyle. It was not yesterday, but the night before. And we were talking, and he started asking me questions about cryptocurrency and how much money I'd made. And I told him, and he was like, wow, that'd be nice. That'd be nice. And I was like, you want me to teach you tomorrow? So I taught him. And, you know, within 24 hours, he made 120% return on his investment. So now he's pretty hooked, I think. So it's pretty neat to have my brother, you know. Hey, what do you think about this one? Should we invest in this? So it's pretty neat. It's pretty neat to say the least.
Yeah, and I'm glad he made that kind of bank, as it were, on that. And just for purpose of full disclosure, you know, I'm doing the cryptocurrency speculation. I think you got me into it, actually, come to think of
yep.
it. And I'm a little bit more of the cautious type, maybe too cautious for my own good. So, I mean, at this point, I'm treating the altcoins kind of like penny stocks. But of course, if you really want to make profits, you have to take bigger risks. But it also means being knowledgeable enough to know which particular ones to take the bigger risks on, because then, you know, you make one mistake. You know, that could be quite it. But no, I'm so far my investment strategy is growing the pot, as it were. It's just taking a really long time. So yes, at some point when things kind of slow down on my part, I would like to kind of learn that a little bit better so I can start giving your brother a run for his money, so to speak.
well, yeah, I mean, he's kind of going off my recommendations now, which, I mean, it's speculation. I mean, you literally just watch for the ones that have, if there's like a 30 or 40% drop, you kind of look at that and you kind of look at the trends, I guess. It's hard to kind of call them trends, but like if you see, you know, multiple times in the past month, it's like, you know, it's the price has doubled from where it was now. You might be, I mean, you'll probably be all right. And plus, I mean, it's not, you wouldn't, I mean, some people definitely do. But, you know, for me, I don't put, you know, I kind of, obviously, you know, it's good to, you know, diversify your portfolio. So I'll do like, you know, 20 or 30 bucks into like four different ones. so that, you know, if one tanks, usually I can make that up and some with the others. So I guess that's just kind of a little, you know, rough overview of my strategy. It's not really a strategy. I mean, it's just speculation. It's luck and you know, kind of, you know, learning the market. So and I will talk about that more in season three. But anyways, that's just kind of you know, some interesting, you know, I guess, things to touch on before we got to the main episode. But yeah, this episode is titled Intentional Communities, a Vonnie Association, and the show notes can be found at vonniepodcast.com/17. This will be episode 3 of 5 in our mini-series on what Rail called localized areas of liberty. Next week, we'll cover local congregations, you know, thank the Free State Project, and then we'll provide you with a conclusionary episode, you know, going over, you know, kind of going over, you know, the pros and the cons for each of the strategies, and, you know, kind of, you know, just leaving that, you know, kind of tying that up with a nice little bow on top. So anything else before we, you know, get on with it, Kyle?
I would just kind of proffer this. Everybody, keep collective movementism in mind as we go through this episode. And obviously, for those of you who haven't listened to that, that was an episode from season one on, well, collective movementism. But yeah, keep that concept in mind as we go through this episode on intentional communities.
Right, right. So let's, you know, define our terms here. What is an intentional community?
So an intentional community is defined as a group of people who have chosen to live together with a common purpose, working cooperatively to create a lifestyle that reflects their shared core values. The people may live together on a piece of rural land, in a suburban home, in an urban neighborhood, and they may very well share a single residence or live in a cluster of dwellings.
Okay. Very good, very good. And I did pull that definition. You know, Rayo didn't really define intentional communities. He just kind of said, hey, here's how it differs from this, and here's some advantages. So I did pull that from a site called IC.org. I think that's intentionalcommunities.org, but IC.org, and it you know, seems to mesh very nicely with what Rayo laid out here, as we'll get to. So what did Rayo have to say about it? He said, quote, "The intentional community is a smaller and more limited approach based on physical congregation of libertarians in a geographical area. The essential difference between an intentional community and a sovereign freeport is admissions requirements. The intentional community would be smaller, less involved in external trade, not possess legal sovereignty, and require less capital," end quote. So I guess he kind of lays out that main difference between, like a freeport, because that'd be, it would... be pretty major, you know, pretty majorly involved with external trade, whereas intentional communities, as we'll kind of, you know, get into, are, you know, more kind of self-sufficient, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is almost, just to kind of go off the cuff here, this almost sounds like forming a neighborhood watch ahead of time. So, you know, unlike the earlier episode this season on free isles, free ports, private cities, and company, requiring, you know, a treaty with a hosting nation state and or whatever the heck else in terms of lots of capital investment. By contrast, the intentional community model that Rayo's kind of explaining here, you know, notice that it, you know, it does not possess legal sovereignty and requires less capital. And so, yeah, it's kind of like a neighborhood watch. Actually, maybe a better example would be something more like an off-grid homesteading area neighborhood. Like, you know, if there was like a 500 acre or square or even square mile area, or, you know, something a little bit smaller than that, where basically a bunch of families chose to settle. Actually, you know what it kind of really reminds me of, Shane, just historically, you remember like the Oregon Trail, like people trying to go along the Oregon Trail and they get to the Willamette Valley,
mm-hmm.
and so forth. It's almost like, you know, the people who survived that didn't get killed off by diseases or hostile Indians or just running out of supplies. Once they get to the Willamette Valley, then they get their own little plot of land and they, you know, basically colonize the area essentially. Well, I mean, geez, I guess that was an intentional community too, in a manner of speaking. Except, of course, they didn't really have any shared values. It was just more go west, young man.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that's good. That's a, you know, good comparison. And I think probably the most important thing here, especially considering the last episode, you consider, you know, the capital investment involved with, you know, the Free Isles and the, you know, the new libertarian nations. And, you know, the intentional community looks very good on that front. You know, obviously, you know, land is expensive. Land is expensive. That's there's certainly no doubt. And obviously it varies depending upon area, depending upon the location. But, you know, compared to the you know, the new libertarian nations, you know, the capital investment here looks very, very good, very, very modest.
Yeah, modest, realistic. And again, it's probably better to think in terms of individuals and families, as in like nuclear, maybe slightly extended family, instead of lots and lots and lots and lots of people, where your MTH has to be so high that we're either talking about at least being able to live on a sub, on a submarine, or even larger. You know, the intentional community, I guess the only downside of it just initially was that the MTH is lower. But then again, if the MTH is lower on anything, it's also much more achievable, at least in the short term.
Yeah, yeah, and I think another, and as Rayo kind of said, you know, it does not possess legal sovereignty. So, like, for example, you know, Derek Bros and the Houston Freethinkers, they're, you know, looking to set up an intentional community in 2020, and they'll still be in. I mean, they don't know where they're going to do it yet, but they'll obviously still have to abide by, you know, Texas laws, or they're supposed to, right? They won't have that sovereignty. They won't have that. That freedom that the open ocean would provide. So that is kind of one negative. Certainly one negative, but again, you know, a lot more realistic rather than, you know, starting a new nation entirely. You just kind of, you know, buy a piece of land and then build it up as you see fit. So let's get on to this next one. So we tossed this one in here right before recording. You know, Kyle pointed out, and I thought this was pretty important, especially considering this isn't, you know, an individual effort. You're going to be associating with others, and Rayo does provide some insight into, you know, how to actually go about doing that. He says, quote, "If you link up with others, be it a single freemate or a number of associates, look for people who are already living in large part as they want to live. Many a man will say and sincerely believe that he wants to Vanu just as soon as he finds the right woman or the right group to do it with, but he doesn't want to do it alone. However, how do you and he know that he can do it until he does it for a substantial time? If he can't stand living alone, if he soon gets bored with himself, chances are he will soon get bored with you too. So suggest that he do it alone for a year or so before trying to link up," end quote. So Kyle, what do you think?
I think that's very sound advice from Rayo about, you know, how do you essentially find like-minded people who are going to have your back? You know, how do you avoid the disingenuous activists that I've written about, you know, elsewhere, like in my last book on security culture and so forth? You know, how do you go about, you know, trying to find those potential allies, as it were? And I think that the approach Rayo takes here is cautious, yes, but I think it's very wise, you know, all things considered. I think the listeners should be very familiar enough with the celebritarians and all of their shenanigans and so forth. And it's not just the political crusading. I'm just saying the shenanigans just more generally, to know that, hey, is this somebody you really want to go have a beer with, much less have as a roommate or something more intensive?
Right, right. So yeah, I think that's good. But, and you mentioned your book on security culture. But yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, vetting. There's definitely some things that you would have to do before. So that is one thing. You know, if making sure that the individual can actually, you know, live, you know, that sort of a lifestyle. But then again, you know, making sure they aren't government agents, that they aren't, you know, just there to, you know, steal your stuff when you're asleep, all of those things that you would normally, you know, take into consideration, say, when you're inviting someone to your home, right?
Yeah, although, you know, I could take a moment and be a little naive here, but even if they were the undercover, whatever the heck, they may actually realize that, hey, being the agent of the state isn't all what it's chalked up to be. I think I'm going to do this genuinely and, you know, kind of quit and all that, because what's better than quitting government employment? Topic for another time. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess that would be kind of the other side of the coin, too, is that, you know, if Vanu is attractive enough, maybe it could encourage people to quit government employment. So even if there was an infiltration problem, which at this point is way too, I don't think that's even likely at this point. But even if it were, let's say, later, personally, I don't know, man. I mean, I guess there always will be people who will try to kind of mess things up, but even if they try to, they're going to do it half-heartedly, right? And I think they should be pretty easy to spot.
Yeah, no, I think that's a valid point. I definitely do. But, you know, I will say, you know, I wouldn't just go start inviting government agents onto my intentional community. But that's just me.
Fair enough. And look, me personally, I wouldn't either. I'm saying if it's more like an undercover thing that they're doing and you honestly right. don't know, then it's pretty much going to be one of two things as far as I can see it. Either A, they're going to be so sloppy and so just careless about it that pretty much – the people who are genuine will look at them like, yep, that guy's bad. We're going to just kind of gently or not so gently shove him out the door. Or the guy is actually blending in pretty well, but then there's like a genuine conversion, which ultimately leads to him quitting his government employment. And so he's not a bludgy anymore. Again, that may very well be naive of me to assume in some circumstances, but I don't think it's entirely outside the realm of impossibility, especially considering individuals, right? I mean, there are some people – look, folks, there are some people who really don't understand the nature of the state, who really don't understand the servile society, who've been very much kept in a box, and that once even a few of those bludgies understand what the heck is actually happening in much the same way that was explained throughout season one – I would assume many of them would make lifestyle changes, maybe not to the extent of becoming Vanuans themselves, but at the very least, you know, at least something, you know, where they're not hurting somebody, right? The basic, more voluntarist kind of approach where it's more about strategic withdrawal, at least that much. I would assume at least some people would. But in any case, man, in terms of, you know, vetting and all that, It's not that difficult. It's also known as, you know, meet people physically and, try to befriend them if you can. And, you know, and then you'll kind of figure out whether they're worth anything or not.
Yes. And I think one other approach to this, too, which I'll mention, you know, Derek Bros, their kind of intent, their, you know, goal of setting up their intentional community in 2020. This was an interesting approach whenever I interviewed him for the other podcast I do. And they already have like, you know, a pretty, you know, good, like a pretty, you know, nice community there in Houston where they have a bunch of workshops, you know, on various subjects. They teach self-defense, they teach self-sufficiency, you know, how to, you know, start your own garden, et cetera, et cetera. You know, freedom cells, that sort of a thing. So they're still going to use that as kind of the base to leverage people into the intentional community. But that's also a very good way to vet them. Right. So they kind of go through their workshop. And when they say, you know, I want to do more, like I want to do more. Well, OK, yeah, come, you know, come out to the intentional community, you know, help us out. See how you like it. And if you want to stay there, you can. So there's kind of that initial, you know, that kind of, you know, more thorough vetting process. Yeah. I think you're right. Like if they're a government agent, I don't think they'd be that interested in what they're actually doing. But if they're, you know, genuinely, you know, trying to, you know, genuinely want to, you know, move into an environment like that, then I think they'd just be, you know, committed to all hell. So I think you're right that it would be very, very clear, or at least pretty clear, as far as, you know, who would be serious and then who wouldn't be.
Yeah. Yeah. And also for those of us who actually are really like living this or at least trying to, right, Vanu is not an all or nothing thing. There are shades of gray, at least in some sense. You know, I think it's very important to keep in mind that interpersonal diplomacy of one kind or another, I think, is also going to become rather important if the Vanuans are going to pursue some sort of intentional community, right? Because as individuals, not to go on too long on this one particular point, but if you look at it praxeologically, like men, you know, engage in action, right? They're human action, as it were. Men use means to achieve certain ends. And because of free will, some men's ends are going to be different from others. Therefore, inevitably, there's going to be conflict. The key question to the human experience, though, is how do you mitigate those conflicts? And even when you have shared values, Shane, do you remember what was it about a few years ago when a bunch of voluntarists were kind of at each other's throats because they were disagreeing about the interpretation of the non-aggression principle and so forth?
Oh, you mean like 6 months ago? Yeah. No.
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah. So even with people with shared values, this kind of happens and so forth. So if somebody's interested in forming like an IC of any kind, I think that one of the first forms of market demand that's going to crop up very quickly is conflict mitigation of some kind, whether that's arbitration, mediation, even adjudication in some sense. is going to become rather quite important.
Yes, yes. And, you know, obviously, I think we can move on here. But, you know, as far as, you know, the people that you are going to, you know, live with, I think that's important to at least spend some time on, which is why we, you know, spent, 13 minutes on that, maybe, or thereabouts. So, all right, let's move forward. Quote, "The intentional community approach appeals to individuals who foresee an impending political economic collapse and or would like to try their hand at self-sufficient living. To others, it might be of value as a vacation spot or as a bedroom community where they could raise children away from many of the irrational influences prevalent in a philosophically mixed society," end quote. So that'd be another benefit, too. You know, he mentions, you know, the philosophically mixed society and those irrational influences. Well, you know, if you have an intentional community, I mean, you could have your own little, I guess, private school there, right? You know, where you're actually, you know, getting taught things. And then obviously the apprenticeships and all that, all the stuff that would come with that. Or, you know, unschooling, you can, you know, keeping them out of the servile society, keeping your children out of the state of servile society is certainly a major benefit with intentional communities.
Right. And I think some of the so-called preppers or whatever would, you know, the survivalists and all that would agree on this point. So it doesn't matter whether it's for some sort of, you know, retreatist type thing about, you know, so-called future emergencies or whatever, or it's more about, you know, being self-sufficient. You know, either way, it's there's definitely a especially if it's done right. It can be beneficial to families and especially, you know, parents and children and so forth. And yeah, I think that the less influenced children are by the servile society, I think the future of humanity looks brighter, because the last thing you want to really do is basically encourage the next generation to lick the boot.
Yeah, that's not good. That's not good. So yeah, that's certainly, you know, one advantage. He mentioned, you know, a vacation spot or, you know, a bedroom community. I don't know. Do you think, you know, he's correct there that you could have like an intentional community, but it wouldn't be where you live the entire time? Like if you meet up with, you know, like let's say you and your family and extended family go down to your, you know, rural area where you have a couple hundred acres and you go live there for 3 months out of the year. Could that be an intentional community even though it's not permanent?
Well, that's kind of getting in. That's a very good question, because now we're getting into the issue of, much like in the previous few episodes, a TAZ versus a PAZ again, aren't we?
Yep. So temporary autonomous zone versus permanent autonomous zone. Yep.
So I guess the question that's kind of implied by what you're kind of getting at is that, is an intentional community a PAZ or a TAZ, or maybe could be both depending on what people want? Now, I think it would be fair to say that some types of intentional communities are PAZs, if we're talking more like a neighborhood type thing. I guess that would be some sort of enclave, maybe even an ethical one, right? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But then again, it doesn't necessarily have to be, right? I mean, if people are pursuing financial independence of one kind or another, see previous episode on that, then if they're engaging in seasonal work, then mobility actually becomes rather important. So if someone is commuting really only on the weekends and otherwise they're living at the job site, they're already mobile. So what kind of intentional community can you have with that if basically your breadwinner is essentially, you know, living at work in a sense? But then if they're only doing that part of the year and then the other part of the year he's basically home, and then as part of that home they're with the intentional community, I guess now that I'm sorry, I know I sound a little bit like Hayek trying to reason things out right from the get-go, kind of on the fly here, but I guess an intentional community for some people could be a TAZ too if you're dealing with seasonal work, right?
Oh yeah, it certainly could be a TAZ. But let me ask a more direct question here, because when it comes to temporary autonomous zones versus permanent autonomous zones, wouldn't that be, you know, the place you're living is mobile, such as like a van? Well, if they go back to the same location, and guys, this might be a little into just minuscule details you might think, but I do think this is important. But like if it's the same location, like the location does not change, it would be a permanent autonomous zone. They just wouldn't be there all the time, correct? Or if they're not there all the time, could it still be considered a TAZ? I mean, I don't know. You kind of get the gist of my question.
I think I'm starting to. I think the key determinant would be whether the geographic space is being held by the folks who are there, or if they're just kind of temporarily, like, well, occupying it. If it's more of an occupy, not to be confused with the other form of occupy, right? A little in-joke there for the political crusaders. If it's more like an occupy type thing, then obviously that's more of a TAZ. But if they actually are holding the land, that's more of a PAZ, obviously. Generally speaking, when we're talking about intentional communities, I think it probably would be fair to say that most of the time we're implying that they're a PAZ, right? It's some sort of neighborhood. It's an off-grid whatcha-who's-it and so forth. They're actually holding the land in some sense. But I guess, I mean, but then again, man, I mean, if you look at something like Burning Man, I guess that's a type, I guess that's an IC of sorts, because that's an annual festival type thing, right? Or actually hold on, I got a better example. The festival thing you're going to, I mean, technically, isn't that like an intentional community of sorts based on shared values?
I mean, yeah, sure, it's shared values, but I would imagine that intentional community, you'd actually, like, I don't think it could be, yeah, I don't know if it's once a year, then I wouldn't see that as an intentional community, because I think an intentional community would be, as we'll kind of get into more here, intentional community is a place where you guys, you know, live together with shared values, you work on self-sufficiency, you that sort of thing. So if there's a, I don't know, that's a good question.
Well, let me try and clarify then, because we are trying to kind of reason this out kind of from first principles and such. Let me postulate something. If indeed you are living with these people and it is day in and day out life, then generally speaking, that would probably be along the lines of a PAZ. If it's more of like a seasonal thing and you're like kind of camping out and it's a couple weeks, maybe even a few months, that's probably going to be more along the lines of a TAZ. Because I think the issue of mobility is going to make it either way. So in terms of whether something's an intentional community, I think the preference is going to be it's going to be a PAZ. It's going to be a fixed area, you know, from this latitude and longitude to that latitude and longitude.
Right.
I mean, festivals don't really last that long, right? Especially if it's an annual thing or whatever.
Yeah, like a week tops.
Now, here's the thing. What about like something like a summer camp? Because some types of like a summer camp type thing would be like a couple weeks, sometimes a few months and so forth. I mean, people are living with each other day in and day out. I mean, is that an intentional community at that point, even though it's temporary?
Well, you know, like, especially if it's like a, you know, a Boy Scout retreat, that's like, you know, a month long thing. I don't know if they do month long things, but if it's something like that, where, I mean, obviously, like if you're in the woods, I mean, I would imagine that, you know, there'd be, you know, some self-sufficient stuff happening there. So, you know, I would certainly consider, you know, something like that, an intentional community, but it would be, obviously a temporary one, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of an interesting question to explore, isn't it? Is the issue of the intentional community's mobility. Is there any mobility? And if so, to what degree? That is a very interesting question. I don't think has ever been brought up.
Yeah, and we'll revisit that. The last excerpt we have here will be will actually, you know, provide a little bit of insight into that. But there's one other excerpt here. But we'll get to it. You know, hopefully I gave you guys something to think about. Feel free to let us know what you think. You can find us at Facebook, facebook.com/ Vonnie Podcast, or you can shoot us an email, Shane@VonniePodcast.com or Kyle@VonniePodcast.com. Certainly love to get your thoughts. So this next one, quote, a Vonnie association of a few dozen to a few hundred will likely be only a little more self-sufficient than one family. A remote, non-Vonnu town of this size probably has a welder, dairy, nurse, maybe even a small machine shop. But most goods and many services are more economical to import than to produce there. Even in a country of 100,000 people, such as Bahama, most items are imported. The major advantage of a Vonnu association compared to a lone family, easier, better import-export. Now, obviously, you know, Vonnu associations could be considered intentional communities, for sure. I mean, there are obviously different applications of that. You could have, you know, just kind of a market where some sort of a marketplace where you don't live together and all you do is pretty much trade. But, you know, a Vonnu association could certainly be an intentional community, especially as Rayo's kind of laid out here. And that's an extremely important point. Easier, better, import, export. Kyle, what do you think?
Yeah, that's I really liked Rayo's description there. And obviously he's appealing to a division of labor, right? In terms of how he was describing, you know, even in a country of 100,000 people, most items are imported. And then he went on to describe about how it's you have easier, better import export. And then, of course, you know, for the listeners, please see earlier episodes, our multiple episodes on import export. So you kind of know what we're kind of getting at there. So in other words, the Vanu Association could facilitate easier, better import export. That's true. However, there still has to be a way for people to cooperate, get along with each other and so forth. So, yeah, if they're carefully vetted, as was mentioned earlier, again, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So the market demand for any sort of arbitration or adjudication that would have to happen wouldn't be as much if the vetting was, you know, good, you know, and squared away and accurate right from the get-go. So people can just focus more on production, whether that's being, as the quote says here, a welder, a dairy, or nurse, or whatever else. And so that is something that's quite significant, is that if you can get some people to work together, and it doesn't have to be some sort of massive collective movement, as in collective movementism, right? You could even have an arguable minority of people, numerically speaking, but it's still sizable enough to where they can essentially have, I guess you could say, a parallel economy of sorts.
Specialized occupations and skills, like having a nurse, would certainly be beneficial. But let me ask you this. So the last episode, the trend was kind of governments, and more governments, right?
Yeah.
So let's kind of, you know, touch upon that here. And we don't have this in the outline, but it just kind of, you know, came to mind here. Mm-hmm. Now, with an intentional community, I don't think you'd have, you know, a government per se. I would hope not. I'd really hope not.
Well, unless there's some sort of contract, whether written or implied. But yeah, as far as I'm aware of, you know, ICs or the Vanu Association as presumably a type of IC, yeah, there's no polyarchy involved here. There's no treaty with a nation state of some kind. This is the union. You're right. I'm glad you brought that up, Shane. This is a marked difference between a free aisle and a Vanu Association / intentional community, is that there is no political crusading involved at all, even in a kind of roundabout way.
Yes, I mean, I could obviously see, and this would all, you know, be voluntary. And I mean, you know, obviously, you know, division of labor, people, you know, working together, that obviously happened in an intentional community, I would presume, in most circumstances. But I'm sure there'd be people, you know, outsource, like, hey, you guys manage the roads and be voluntary and all of that. But yeah, I don't think it really be feasible to, you know, have any sort of government there, unless they're, well, once they implement a government and, like, you know, start taxing their citizens, then it's not an intentional community anymore. It's something else. It's called, you know, what, like a town?
Yeah, some sort of municipal government of some kind. Yeah. I mean, essentially, it's kind of interesting, this notion of IC. It's essentially an attempt to recreate, like, small town Americana, which is not entirely bad, because if you look at the not so wild West, that's essentially kind of what they were in a manner of speaking, except minus the share court values, right? When, if you're talking about, not to get into a huge history lesson here, but suffice it to say, with westward expansion, you basically had, you know, whoever could go and all that. And sometimes people had shared values, sometimes not. So all that the notion of an intentional community would be is that people would explicitly get together based on shared values. Actually, let me make this a little bit more concrete. Just thought of this. So there are some types of neighborhoods in some types of areas, sometimes they're HOA, sometimes not, where they have very restrictive covenants. That could be one way of having an intentional community of some kind, where you just have very restrictive covenants about who can and who cannot be a member. And it's all voluntary. Nobody's rights are being violated. And yeah, mm-hmm. some individuals will be excluded depending on the conditions of the covenant, which is a type of contract, depending how restrictive they are. Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes it will be discriminatory in one sense or another. But so what? You know, I mean, what's the alternative? I mean, you can basically, I mean, yeah, on the one side of the status spectrum, you have basically Jim Crow. And then at the other side of the status spectrum, you have Brown versus Board of Education. You know, you have coerced segregation versus coerced integration, and of course, free association is never allowed in any of this. And so when we're looking at something like an intentional community or a Vanu association, what we're really also looking at is how would like a free association actually work, even in a more philosophical sense? And yeah, some people will want restrictive covenants. And by the same token, other people will not want restrictive covenants, and it'll pretty much be a kind of multicultural free-for-all. Or let me put it a little bit nicer way, more cosmopolitan. And both are fine because nobody's rights are being violated.
Right. Okay, yeah, very good. So, all right, let's get to this next one here. We've kind of alluded to this a couple of times, but, quote, some people talk of developing a parallel economy, producing all essential supplies and spare parts before concerning themselves much with physical invulnerability. But this supposes involvement of millions of people. And what would a non-Vanu alternate economy be anyway? An enterprise vulnerable to the state must operate under state rules. This, not the rhetoric of its founders, will determine the way it operates, assuming it is a success. Function determines form. A real alternate economy requires Vanu, though not necessarily wilderness forms exclusively. End quote. What do you think?
I think that what he's kind of getting at here is that the MTH has to be higher. And again, for folks who aren't familiar with that, please go to season one and listen to the episode on mean time to harassment. That's what MTH stands for. So what Rayo's kind of getting here really is just it really is just about MTH. And that's it. So the MTH has to be somewhat higher, although not quite as high as it would be for a so-called free poor, which of course has its own baggage of one kind or another, right? So I think really what Rayo's kind of getting at here also as well is that if you're going to have a so-called parallel economy, even an underground one, right, in some sense, maybe a little bit of a enclave that's ethical. Sorry, I repeat the joke from earlier. See previous episode on ethical enclaves. It's there has to be sufficient bodies. And again, you know, the more people you have participating in, like I said, marketplace, the greater the division of labor can be, right? That comes from Menger, that comes from von Mises and Rothbard and so forth. So that's just kind of what it is a priori. And I think that's really all kind of Rayo was kind of getting at here.
Yeah. You know, I certainly agree. I certainly agree. And I think it's worth reiterating that, you know, obviously that invulnerability to coercion is definitely important. As he said, an enterprise vulnerable to the state must operate under state rules. So obviously you could certainly have, you know, bring it up again, ethical enclaves within your intentional community. And I would think, you know, that would happen, you know, especially with like bartering and exchanging of services. I think that would happen, you know, more often than not, if not just outright tax evasion. But
hold on that point. No, that's a very good point you brought up. But yeah, if people were in, let's say in your intentional community, you had an ethical enclave. Okay, well, if there was a social custom that you don't snitch ever to a bludgy, then yeah, they're going to have a hard time going to pinning anything on anybody, aren't they?
Right.
You know, if security culture was followed stringently and was practiced really, really well, then yeah, I mean, the bludgies may still lock up people every now and again, but it'll make their job a whole lot tougher. It'll also mean a lot less people going to friggin' prison for victimless nonsense.
Yes. Oh man, I think that's certainly a good point. Yeah, and there has to be at least one party to the transaction, you know, in order for there to be you know, taxes on it. You know, one person has to report it. Obviously, not in all circumstances, but that's kind of what Rayo said in the Ethical Enclaves article. But yeah, I think you know, that would certainly be you know, at least you know, some aspect of an intentional community, which I think is you know, great. I think it's great. You know, previously, you know, we kind of alluded to the idea that there could be temporary autonomous zones or, you know, intentional communities that are TASs. And Rayo does provide one example of that. And I think I've mentioned this in other episodes, maybe. I don't remember for sure, but we'll go ahead and mention it now. Quote, the voluntary floating association has some advantages over the free hamlet in the hills. Not only will anchors be lowered where state interference is minimal, the very mobility discourages intervention. For instance, state school officials seldom molest the children of transients. Another blessing for parents, the irrationalist coercive influence of outside peer groups and mass communication media is considerably reduced. Differences of objective and conflicts of personality, which may disrupt an immobile intentional community, are easily resolved. The dissenters weigh anchor. And a community can develop by easy steps and without formal direction. No would-be founder need acquire a large tract of land, uncertain as to market demand or the response of the state. The floating voluntary society begins with a population of one, end quote. And this is, you know, why I, you know, the obviously the sailboating thing is my favorite thing. And obviously for those folks who, you know, I've had people raise concerns to me like, you know, this is a great idea, but, you know, I like having, you know, like I like being with my friends and my family. So like I'm not just going to disappear out in the woods. It's like, okay, I certainly understand that. Well, here's, you know, one option for you. You could have a voluntary floating association. You know, you could still kind of reap those benefits from, you know, a division of labor. You wouldn't have to deal with, governments. You just wouldn't, as long as you're outside of that international waters line of 24 nautical miles or 27, you know, miles. You could, you know, live free. And again, reiterate this. The irrationalist coercivist influence of, you know, mass communication media and, you know, government and such. You could certainly avoid that out there on the open ocean. You know, I think this is a great, you know, alternative. Well, I guess not even alternative, just another great solution for those who do want something like an intentional community for their pursuance of Anu.
Yeah, and I know how you are about your sailboats. But seriously, though, I think this what Rayo kind of said here, I think answers our earlier question about, you know, intentional communities, TAS versus PAS. I think, honestly, they can be either, depending on what people want and how they go about, you know, implementing it. So, yeah, if you have like an off-grid homestead slash neighborhood watch type thing, then generally speaking, that's going to be more of a pass. If, however, you're going to do kind of this, you know, floating platform thing or wherever, and then as Rayo said, the dissenters can just, weigh anchor, as it were, then, yeah, that's going to be a TAS, isn't it?
Yes. And also one other thing, too, because you kind of mentioned you mentioned arbitration and mediation a couple of times so far. Well, you know, he mentions this, but, you know, one great aspect about, you know, the voluntary floating association on the water is, you know, if you're on land and you're having, you know, a quarrel with your neighbor, you know, it's very expensive, and, you know, it's not always, you know, the desirable thing to do to just pick up and move. Sometimes you just have to deal with it, and that can be, you know, very, very stressful. You know, I've had neighbors like that in the past. And, you know, whenever you're in that voluntary floating association, well, you weigh anchor and you float away wherever you want to. I mean, if your neighbor to the left is a jerk, you know, you could, if your you know, floating association is quite large, you can always, you know, go on, you know, you, like, you can go the other side, or you can float wherever you want to. So that's a very good way to, you know, negate that conflict that does often happen when people are, you know, affixed to a certain location.
Right. And I don't think it would be untoward of me to say that it's quite possible that mobility and a market demand for adjudication really is a zero sum. It really is a seesaw. So the less mobility you have, the greater the market demand will be for adjudication, and then vice versa. So if you are dealing with an intentional community that is, let's just say, sailboat based, and leave it at that, okay? If it's sailboat based, I don't think there's going to be much of a market demand for any sort of arbitration when inevitably conflicts crop up. Because, again, like Rayo says, the dissenters weigh anchor, and that's it. They just go.
Yeah.
So you don't need that, you know, you don't need to do the so-called anarcho-capitalist thing of, oh, now you have to agree to some sort of mutually agreeable arbitrator and then, like, go through all these policies and procedures of one kind or another, which, although granted, the whole DRO concept is not as nowhere as bad as the state's, you know, multiple levels of judicial nightmares. It still takes time. Right. It's still in our opportunity cost. And so, yeah, if there's any way to reduce that further by just weighing anchor, then I think that's, for some people in some circumstances, I think that's where the market's going to lend towards. If there is increased mobility, there's going to be less of a demand for adjudication.
Yes. One thing Rayo kind of, you know, said would be, a positive for Ivano Association is obviously that you can have those specialized occupations and skills like a nurse. Well, you could still have those in your intentional community on the water too, which I think is just great. So I guess kind of to begin to wrap this up. So I guess the similarities between the TAS, like the Voluntary Floating Association, versus the PAS, the intentional community, say the one that Derek Rose and the Houston Freethinkers are looking to set up in 2020. You can have pretty much all of the advantages from the PAS with the TAS, or the Voluntary Floating Association. I guess the hurdle would be, it's probably easier to convince people to, move to, a location on land, versus, hey, you need to, go buy a boat and, go meet us out there on the water. I think that's kind of one kind of negative aspect. But with the Voluntary Floating Association, other than that right there, just the advantages are, my preference, obviously, it's kind of obvious to you and for anyone who's listened to this podcast for a while, but obviously the intentional community on the water is far more attractive for me, but obviously we're all individuals and we have our own preferences, so.
Yeah, as we start to kind of close out here, I would just say that in terms of my own individual subjective preferences, of course. Even me, I'm not a big fan of groupy stuff, like, at all, right? Again, for people who haven't listened to that season one episode, listen to the Collective Movementism episode and you will understand just how much of an individualist I really, really am. That being said, since we're now into season two and we're looking at the practice of Vanu, if the choice for me was between going through the utter nightmare of trying to set up a free port, free isle, private city, some variant thereof, versus an intentional community, of which a Vanu Association would be one type of that. I don't know, man. I'd rather have a Vanu Association, like, hands down. Like, it's not even funny.
Yeah.
And not only that, oh, and one other thing too, since we already did the Ethical Enclaves episode, I would also further say that I think an ethical enclave and a Vanu Association / intentional community are more similar to each other than not, and especially relative to a freeport, which is like an entirely different monster altogether.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I certainly agree. Yeah, that's kind of my preferences too. But anything on the ocean, I'll kind of take what I can get right now. And there's just got to look at what the market's providing, right?
Yeah.
So I guess one other kind of point here that Rio kind of made. He said, quote, "A Vanuan can minimize dependence upon the coerced economy by stockpiling essentials, but he cannot achieve complete invulnerability. Again, Vanu is not an all or nothing thing." End quote. So that's just kind of reiterating what we've already kind of discussed here. You can, become as self, you can become, fully self-sufficient, and wherever your location is, you can do that. But, freedom, the absence of coercion, there's no such thing as a society without coercion. That's kind of a utopian idea. So he kind of lays this out here. You cannot achieve complete invulnerability. I think that's just kind of one important thing to note there.
Right. However, you can get closer to said invulnerability, actual Vanu, if you can find and surround yourself with people with shared values who are also pursuing invulnerability themselves. And, especially if you're going to be living around them and it's going to be like a day in and day out thing, surrounding yourself with people you can get along with, surrounding yourself mm-hmm. with people who are not outright hostile to you like the Servile Society is. I gotta say, man, we're kind of mentioning like a little bit of my experiences in the Servile Society and so forth. And, being surrounded by coworkers who are just straight up outright hostile in the way that they are is not a way to be, but my choices, at least right now, are not that flexible. And even me personally, if I had any real choice in the matter in terms of having my life in precisely the way I would like, I would rather be surrounded by coworkers and people who, at this point, I hate to say this, but actually would be minarchists, at least a little bit. So at least the statism can be a little bit minimal. But then, but yeah, so again, not, you know, shades of gray, I suppose. But the point here is I'd rather have people where at least we have at least some things in common and have at least some shared values. You know, we're never agree on anything 100%. Obviously, we're all individuals, you know, menus, means to achieve ends, and not all ends are the same, of course. Mm-hmm. But that being said, man, like I would prefer to be surrounded by people who at least where we have at least some sort of, you know, there's kind of a baseline, like what's kind of the deal here? And if there's no baseline, then there really is no common culture at all. And thus we might as well be foreigners, but not foreigners in the sense of like a neutral distinction, but foreigners in the sense of, you know, may kill each other, may not. We'll see what opportunities arise, kind of thing. You know, a suspicion, almost like a cold war, as it were. It, and I hate to put it that way. I mean, that's definitely how I think of the servile society, at the very least. Yeah. It's more of a cold war. But yeah, seriously, man, even I would prefer to be surrounded by people where I can be, you know, at least somewhat comfortable. And I will say this, in terms of those festive freedom festivals and all that, that's almost like a like being temporarily surrounded by people where you have shared values.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously, when we get to season 3, we'll hopefully, you know, actually, no, that's going to be a few years out. You know, I hope we're still not on season 2 whenever, you know, 2020 happens. That would be that'd be unfortunate for all of us. you know what? I guess that kind of nixes that. We'll be able to have some case studies here, you know, coming up in season 3, but we won't. So I guess that's kind of a moot point, unfortunately.
Yeah. And again, like Rayo said, Vanu is not an all or nothing thing. So, you know, anything you can do like step by step to gradually surround yourself with people, even if it's not, you know, the model of an intentional community or Vanu Association, just having people that you have peer-to-peer relationships with and people that you say, okay, here's what's perfect to kind of end out on. Do you trust these other individuals and do they trust you in return? That's it. I mean, either you people trust each other or you don't.
Yeah. Yeah. That is certainly a good point. A good point to end on. You got anything else?
I would just say that if there ain't no trust, there ain't no love. And if there ain't no love, there ain't no family and certainly no community.
Okay, very good, very good. So, yeah, as I mentioned last week, due to popular demand, we do have a donation page set up on the website. If you want to financially assist us in spreading the message of Vanu, you know, please consider shooting us a donation. Just visit vanupodcast.com/donate, and you'll find buttons for PayPal, Bitcoin, and a whole slew of altcoins. So thank you in advance for your support. We certainly appreciate it. But yeah, that's all we have for you. We'll talk to you next week.